of our discussion. Before you jump into this episode, I suggest listening to part one, where we introduce the topic and set up our conversation. After that, you can easily jump into today's discussion. Enjoy.
Do you think that the policy has, how has it impacted generational attitudes?
Yeah, I wouldn't say like the two-child policy have that much impact because, you know, it doesn't last for long for it changed three-child policy. Yeah. But definitely one-child policy have a very huge impact. And I also think it's combining with how the society have transformed, people's cultural values kind of shifted.
Yeah.
And one-child policy lasts for about 4 decades. And it definitely like changed people's attitude a lot about childbearing, how they should take care of their child, what would be counted as being responsible to their children. So back in the time that one child policy was largely promoted, and in those propaganda you can see they promote the idea of having better children instead of more children. Many family, they used to have many children, 8 or 10 even, so they have a lot of children and they don't care about quality that much, not in terms of like eugenic-wise.
Right.
It's like how you can raise your children, give them good education, take care of them. They have
health
more children.
And well-being as well.
Yeah, exactly. Many of them, they starve in famine, but because there are so many children, there aren't enough food to feed all the children. So during that time, one-child policy encouraged them to focus on taking care of one or two children and make them go to universities or get a good job, then it can also like benefit back to you. Heavily related to like development of urban cities and like industrialization development, because China have shifted away from a model of agrarian society. And even though the development of agriculture is still very important now, for sustaining people's livelihood, because, you know, we have such a big population, so we want to make sure everyone has food.
Of course.
But there are fewer families who farm their own lands, I would say, and eat what they grow as in the old time. More of them are trying to get into urban cities and seek for employment opportunities and better life quality. So maybe back in agrarian society, having more children, the quantity is very important, especially boys, because they have the strength to farm the land.
Yes.
And it's not only continuation of family lineage, right? But also it means higher productivity. So it's like having a lot of boys were important, but now it's different. Those who were able to stay and develop in the urban cities, maybe they will never go back to their hometown. Like, they're going back, like it's kind of seen as a shame or like a last resort. Many of them, they were able to find opportunities in cities. Many new families just formed there. They have completely different lifestyle. Both boys and girls now, they have more equal, but definitely not, it's still unequal, but they have the opportunity to get education, jobs. They were able to make, they are able to make money, basically. So like, both girls and men, it's like more intellectual work instead of just physical labor.
Yes.
So
yes, true.
Girls and boys have like more equal chance. And now people just want to make sure that they have the ability to provide a good life for their children. I just watched a video yesterday night that man was saying that now actually young people, they have more responsibility for their children. They want to provide the best to their children instead of just make them survive, you know, live. But it's like quality life. And now they have this aspiration to give good life, but it's also they face a lot more pressure in job seeking and like working overtime. So back in the days, it's China was more socialist and everyone kind of got a job and it's very stable. They know how much they are making every month, every year. They won't lose their job, maybe forever. They still have that
Job
retained. So
security, yeah.
yeah, they don't have like there is no instability that you don't know if you will be laid off tomorrow. But now the market, you know, it become very competitive and then you never know. Now there are increasing youth unemployment as well. So there are so many things for young people to worry about. So yeah. Another thing that I actually want to talk is about regarding to the good life that Chinese parents or Chinese young people who will become parents, they care a lot. They have a great concern about it. I even like I have this conversation with my friends as well. Chinese education system is too competitive. I don't know if I can even succeed in that competitive system because I do an international curriculum. So I kind of escape from that national curriculum because I know it's too competitive. Oh, like I told my mom, oh, I can't do it. Maybe let's go to, we study abroad, then we have a more chilled life, you know? Then it, but for my mom, it's less of a burden for me, but it's more economic burden for my mom. If we want our children to stay in China, do the national curriculum, it is almost inevitable for Chinese parents to send their children to tutoring classes like outside the formal schools that students attend. All the children, they are like all the other children are going to those tutoring classes. Then children have to go, that otherwise
Exactly.
your children will be left behind. A decade ago, people only have those tutoring classes in like their last year of high school when they need,
The
you
difficult
know,
years, basically.
a difficult year. But now it's starting from kindergarten, I would say.
I feel like it's the same with internships and stuff these days as well. When I was in school, the idea of doing an internship, the concept of doing an internship wasn't a thing. But I feel like now you've got people at the age of 14, 15 already starting off doing internships. Of course, the kind of learning you'd get is crazy. But I don't even know if you'd be able to absorb everything that you're learning because it's.
Like, you don't have that experience. Have your brain fully developed for in nowadays Chinese society, I guess everyone have this pressure, and then it's like you can imagine if you become a parent, you can't really resist. You would definitely send them to do something, even though it is not just about the schoolwork. You will send them to do maybe skiing or like very special talents. I don't think playing piano is that special anymore. Back in the day, everyone do it, but now they're playing instrument that I can't name. So yeah. Three-child policy. Like they were saying that if, you know, if we have more children, then we are sending all three children, and then it's like triple the cost of tuition. But I have to say, the government has tried to implement more supporting policy, but because they really want the three-child policy to work, I guess. So what they have done, I can share a few. The first is tax reduction. So a very typical way to like so the basically the taxpayers' expense relating to caring for infants and young children under 3 years old are deducted at a fixed amount of 1,000 RMB per infant per month. So could be like 100% on either the father or the mother, so deducted from their like salary, so they don't need to pay that amount of tax, or it could be like 50-50. So it could be a split, it could be just on one person, so they can kind of allocate it freely. But Imagine like 1,000 RMB is not a lot. The one tutoring fee, I would say, is about like 100 RMB, is maybe in very, I don't think any friends around me, they're doing like 50 RMB classes, but advanced courses, then it might take up to 1,000 RMB. So one class, 1 hour, it's 1,000 already. For now, you might say that, oh, it's for infants, then you don't need that much money. You just need to buy the milk powder, etc., I guess. But then the problem is they only have this policy for 3 years old and under 3 years old children. Then what about like above? Like
Yeah.
Chinese parents need to sustain the rest of at least 15 years. This part for like government supporting policy is not very sufficient. And
Yeah.
another thing that, speaking directly to the tutoring class issues, the government actually tried to bar a lot of private company that offer after school tutoring and targeting like China's 100 billion for profit test prep industry. So it's a
Wow, it's $100 billion. I mean, that's very believable.
So like they're kind of barring them, and then like many of them just shut down. A problem that people raise is that if you bar these private companies that provide test prep tutoring, then you know most of them are in a class, right? Like it's not an individual tutor, not one-on-one. But now you are kind of causing the problem that rich people, they can afford a private tutor, so the teacher can come to their home, and that doesn't count as something that
Yeah.
government prohibit. So it will cause wealth inequality. Then
But yeah.
wealthy people, they have like better access, they have resources to hire a private tutor, and then their children can achieve better, while the relatively less wealth of family, they can't afford, and then their children can't get into the top universities, then the whole social mobility stuff.
Yes, it's a vicious cycle. And that makes so much sense because basically, I think what you're saying is that the policy kind of hits on so many levels that you can't have surface level policies to support it. So something like banning private tutors is a very surface level way to tackle the problem of over-competitiveness, right? Because it can easily be surpassed.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, lots of problem for three-child policy implementation, I guess. All the unintended consequence and how government is not really able to support the
Yeah.
families. Like maybe now they are kind of advocating again for like quantity. You don't need to give so much quality for your children, just raise them. And then I heard an LSE event recently. I can also share the link. So it's by an economic professor at LSE, and then she wrote a book called China Playbook, I think. And then someone asked her in the Q&A session, like, what do you think of the youth unemployment issues? She said it's not the top priority for China to address right now. And then, which I found really interesting because it closely relates to my future. So I think it's a top priority that you need to address. But you said no, it's not the top priority. Actually, China have a lot of job vacancy. It's not like this problem. It's just all the Chinese young people, they are receiving like higher education. So they are not only doing undergrad, they do master. And then if they can't find job, they even go to do PhD. And then they have like very high education, and then they are looking for something better. And then they want a job that kind of meets their qualification. And then so they can have more money as well. And then, but Now, where are all the job vacancies? They are in like manufacturing sectors, so like lower skills sector, like not that you don't need that much like knowledge or like education qualification to do those stuff. But now there is the thing that young people who earn these high degrees, they will not fill those vacancy basically. Like it's understandable, but there is an imbalance between what people can and want to do, and then on the other side, what the economy is lacking right now. And then,
But thank you so much, Doris. This episode has been so different because it's felt like a seminar discussion and it's just taken me back. But yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. Is there anything else you want to add about the three-child policy? Any closing thoughts? Anything at all?
I would say this like three-child policy really encourage us to think that we need to see it from through different lenses. In for example, in this case, I think it through the gender lenses and then like how it would affect specific populate group of population, and then it's something that when we are implementing policy, we really need to think about. And then I just yeah, just I support the young women who are not getting married.
Yeah, same here. I will always support the right of a woman to choose. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your time, Doris. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to So We Heard. We hope you enjoyed our show. I'm your host, Ragini, signing off and going to overhear some interesting conversations to bring back for you. See you. A special thanks to the LSE Department of International Development and the LSE Volunteer Center for all their support in not only the production and promotion of this episode, but also with expanding our team. We would not be able to reach all of you if it wasn't for their platform. Thank you, LSE.
This episode was produced by Ragini Puri and researched by Doris Huang.